Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. You're probably familiar with Laura Ingalls Wilder and her series of Little House books. You're probably less familiar with her sisters. Carrie Ingalls was the third daughter of the four and is just a teenager when the series ends, but she goes on to live a non-traditional pioneer life that eventually lands her in Keystone. Linda Starbuck is on the board of the Keystone Area Historical Society, and she joins us today for our Images of the Past to tell us more about Carrie Ingalls Swanzee. Linda, welcome to In the Moment.
Yeah, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
So I'm really fascinated. The more I read about Carrie, she doesn't have any marriage prospects after school and starts out as a teacher like her sister, but that's not exactly where her passion is. Tell us about what she goes on to do instead.
Yeah, so after giving a try at teaching, she really preferred working at the DeSmet News and Leader paper, where she started out learning to set type. But ultimately, she enjoyed learning all aspects of the newspaper business. And she did that work on and off for years while she was kind of alternating back and forth between working at the paper and also doing clerking jobs at other local businesses in DeSmet.
And do we have examples of her writing or some of her work that we still have left over?
You know, it's interesting because I think we've really been searching for bylines of Carrie Ingalls, but they're really not to be found. We certainly know that while she was managing the papers and publishing the papers, she was writing local interest stories and human interest stories. So we can pinpoint some of those to her. We know over time she ended up writing a history of the town of DeSmet on their 50th anniversary, and she did a lot of writing in her civic groups and its different roles of officers in her roles in Keystone, but we really don't have papers with byline Carrie Ingalls on them.
And how abnormal was this for the time to have a woman working in the newspaper industry?
It really wasn't, especially out in the small towns in western South Dakota. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the name Edward Senn. He actually was a well-known South Dakota newspaper publisher, and she began to work for him running newspapers in small towns. And he had really already been hiring women to run his papers, particularly women homesteaders. They were tending to be adventurous, and like Carrie, after she proved up, she was able to travel and go to new towns and follow the settling of the land where he was setting up his papers. The homesteaders at the time had to file proof notices in local papers to ensure no one was contesting their claim. So Senn was even known as the final proof king because that was really the main source of income for his papers. But he, Carrie was not that abnormal. He really did hire women, and they were working in these small towns, not very good equipment, not a lot of supplies. They made do. And so she really did fit a model of what was happening in the small presses in western South Dakota.
And that might be the piece of Carrie's story that caught my attention the most, was reading that she goes to Pierre and files her own homestead claim as an unmarried woman. And I guess maybe I shouldn't be that surprised, but that was kind of the first that I read of anyone doing that. I was like, oh, I can't believe that she just went out on her own by herself on this homestead claim. What, I mean, do we know that much about her time as a homesteader?
Well, we know some, and we actually have some photographic evidence. And she did go out on her own, but actually there were some other neighbors, if you will, in DeSmet that also filed some claims. So she, you know, she knew some folks once she got out there, but she actually filed her claim in western South Dakota in the area of Phillip, South Dakota. And she had been even traveling before filing her claim in Colorado, in Wyoming, she was kind of going after that climate cure out in Colorado. She had some hay fever and asthma issues, and she had traveled around out in Colorado to try and help that. And it really must have been successful because she did, after returning, go right to filing her homestead claim. And she spent the rest of 1907 getting her land ready. She brought in various structures onto the land, and by spring she was able to move in. She had brought in a claim shanty and some other structures and fenced some of the acreage. She did have the full 160 acres, and she lived on it and finished out the required 14 months that at that time is what had to be met before she could outright purchase the land. And that's actually what she did. Again, she was 37 years old. She wasn't married. And she really looked at this homestead and owning this homestead as a good financial investment for her future.
So we have this financial savvy and really, I think it's fair to say, kind of this gutsy attitude, like we said, that probably made her especially well able to work for people like Edward Senn. And he ends up sending her to the Black Hills, and that's when her life really changes, right?
Yes. After working several different papers over kind of the plains of western South Dakota, he transferred her to Keystone, South Dakota in 1911, and then ultimately to Hill City in 1912. And as it turns out, he was really savvy. And the mining claims really had the same final proof notice requirements as homesteads. So he was able to keep making money on his papers in the mining community. But when Carrie got to Keystone, she was 41, still unmarried. But she it was there that she met a Keystonian widower named David Swanzey.
David Swanzey, he has a long history of his own in Keystone, kind of a well-established businessman. What can you tell us about David Swanzey?
Yeah, well, he and his first wife, Elizabeth, were one of the founding families of Keystone in the 1890s. And he really was a well-respected businessman. He was one of the early graduates of the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, and he really was an expert on the geology of the area in the Keystone area. And he was a mine owner himself. He owned a number of mines as well as other rental properties in town. He was a justice of the peace. He was on the school board. He eventually became the railroad depot agent in Keystone when the Burlington Northern Railroad came to town. But unfortunately, Elizabeth's premature passing left him with two small children to care for. And it's assumed, it's very likely he would have been in the newspaper office, particularly relating to filing proofs on his mining claims. And it's likely that's where he met Carrie in the newspaper office. And eventually he started to court her. So it was about a year of courting, and they were married just a few days before she turned 42nd. And upon her marriage, she gave up working in the newspaper and became a full-time wife and really a devoted stepmother to David's children. At the time they were married, Mary, the oldest daughter, was 8, and Harold was 6.
Wow. And what do we know then about Carrie and David's married life in Keystone? Does she stay there for the rest of her life?
Yeah. She actually does. It's, Carrie and David were married for 26 years and lived in Keystone. They had a really comfortable life. They had a nice house, but unfortunately, David never hit it big in any of his mines. Carrie was really a great partner for him. She helped manage his businesses, and they were very active in the Keystone community over the years. Carrie was a member of the Congregational Church, which is actually still an active church in Keystone today. She was in the Ladies Aid Society. She loved reading books. She was in the Extension Club. She was active in politics. And she actually was a member of the Order of the Eastern Star for 50 years. She was the first person in Keystone to earn that distinction. She had joined the Eastern Star way back in the SNET as a young girl. And David was very much involved in the Masonic Lodge. And Carrie and David both held a number of important offices in those two organizations. But he did pass at the age of 84. He was actually 16 years her senior. So she became a widow at 68. And it was very tragic because the very next year after David passed, she lost her stepson, Harold, in a tragic car accident. And so she lost both of those men in her life in a very short period of time. But she did. She persevered. She stayed on in Keystone. She was responsible for managing David's assets. And she stayed active in her civics group. She had wonderful friends in Keystone, as well as her stepdaughter, Mary, who settled in Hill City. And by this time had been married and had a large number of children of her own. And she did. And she stayed active till the end. She actually, her last trip she took, she was 74 years old. She boarded a train and she went to visit her sister, Laura, in Mansfield, Missouri. But she, so she did end up spending the last 35 years of her life in Keystone. She passed away in 1946, just a few months shy of her 76th birthday. And she was buried back in the SMET per her request, even though the town of Keystone did absolutely benefit from the Swansea estate. They provided for a new Masonic Lodge. Carrie donated land to the fire department. There's even a street in Keystone called Swansea Street. So you can go in and walk down the street.
Wow. We have just about a minute left, but I know just looking at the timeline, Carrie was the only of the Ingalls sisters to live to see all of Laura Ingalls Wilder's books published. So what do we know about her reaction to those Little House on the Prairie books?
She knew that her family's life had been immortalized. The pioneer aspect of their life had been immortalized in the Little House books. And because, you know, just that couple years before her passing, she had been out to visit Laura, and she saw all that fan mail showing up in the mailbox and people just randomly stopping by Laura and Almanzo's farm to pay respects. And so she knew that the books were very popular. And but she was noted by her friends as being quietly proud of her connections to the Little House books. She didn't really go around bragging about it or drawing attention to it, but she knew how important the books were.
My guest has been Linda Starbuck with the Keystone Area Historical Society. Linda, thanks so much for joining us, telling us more about Carrie Ingalls Swansea. I hope you can join us on the program again to share more history with us sometime.
Would love to. Thank you for sharing Carrie's story.
And the Keystone Area Historical Society has several Carrie-related projects they'll be announcing soon. You can find them on Facebook, the Keystone Historical Museum, and their website, keystonehistory.com.